Hey everybody, Steve Peters here. I want to start off this podcast with a little shameless plug, if it's okay. Today I'm announcing a pretty cool project, I think. Its working title is Project Alibi, and it's going to be a free Halloween comedy horror story that'll be told in the week leading up to Halloween 2014. The unique thing about it is that it's going to be told on a well-established social platform that we can't reveal yet, that as far as we know, has never been used to tell a story before. Now, I'm partnering up with a good friend of mine, writer-producer Allison Norrington from Story Central, to tell a ghost story for the digital age. But more an experience than a story, it'll play out in your day-to-day digital life, just like your real life with all your friends does. And of course, those of you who know me will know that there will be a few surprises along the way. Now, we're announcing this as an Indiegogo campaign to offset costs, as it's really a passion project for you, and not for some client somewhere. So to find out more and possibly become a part of the journey, go to Indiegogo.com and search for Project Alibi, or storyforwardpodcast.com/Project Alibi will get you there too. So thanks a lot, and with all your help, I think we can give you all the scary Halloween treat that you deserve. And now, on with the podcast. Episode of the Story Forward Podcast, the podcast that explores the ever-expanding world of the future of storytelling and entertainment, from arcs and apps to the wild west of the web and beyond. It is Thursday, and I don't know what date it's going to be, but we know what day it is here. It's August 2nd. We're here live with a very special podcast for you today. We're here live at ARG Festicon in Portland, Oregon, with a live studio audience. Give yourself a Hopefully it's beautiful because Skype won't give us any problems today. So anyway, we're here with, this is going to be the first of two episodes in the first two panels. And this is the 10th anniversary of a little game known as I Love Bees. And this is going to be the first panel. We're going to have some players that were very instrumental in the game and that were kind of, we call them deep divers in the industry now. I don't know what they call themselves. People that got very, very into the game, and so we'll be talking to them about the player experience, and then after this, we're going to have a session with the creators of the game, who are here, who are rock stars in their own right, to get a perspective from the other side of the curtain, the creator experience, the puppet master experience. So, for those of you who aren't familiar with I Love Bees, before we get into introducing our players, just a quick, you know, history for those of you that weren't around. It was an alternate reality game that served as both a real-world experience and viral marketing campaign for the release of Bungie's 2004 video game Halo 2. It was created and developed by those folks over there, and many of them had previously created an arc for the film AI entitled The Beast. I Love Bees was commissioned by Microsoft, Halo 2's publisher, and it was a marketing success. About 250,000 people viewed the I Love Bees website when it was launched in August 2004, and more than 500,000 returned to the site every time the pages were updated. This according to Wikipedia. More than 3 million visitors viewed the site over the course of 3 months, and thousands of people around the world participated in the game, answering payphones and hurricanes, all sorts of fun stuff like that, crossing international borders to answer phones. It was crazy. I Love Bees won numerous awards for the innovation that it spawned, and it inspired numerous other alternate reality games for video games. So that's it. That's the game, and it involved, you know, running around answering payphones. But it was so much more than that. With us today, we've got four of the all-star players from the game. We've got on the left, we've got Mr. Ariok, who say hello there.
Hello, Steve.
And he's, for those of you in the home audience, you can't tell, he's got a very impressive I Love Bees, brand new I Love Bees tattoo on his leg. It's very fetching. We'll post that on the website, and it's available free for request. We also have, going across, we've got Mr. Preston Thorne, also known as WeFun.
Hey, guys.
And to his left, Mr. Jeff May, all the way from Canada, also known as The Bruce.
Hello, Steve.
And finally, Lenore Henry, known affectionately as HMR PETA to many of us.
Hi.
All right, so my first question for you guys, and just feel it's just, this is all very, very casual, and just we're here, we're friends, right? You know, this is what we do. So first off, how did you find out about I Love Bees? Who was kind of the first among you, I think, that was playing, or were you all there right at the beginning? Anybody can jump in.
I had heard about it, well, I had heard about the Bees long before, well, not that long, but many years before, had been looking for an experience like that because I came into the Beast too late. And I believe I saw something on Slashdot about this weird website that had this weird thing going on, and it was too obtuse for me to quite get into it, so I let it sit. And so I think it was then Penny Arcade later mentioned it, and I got back into it, and the coordinates came up, and I was all in.
The coordinates came up, and that's what did it for you. Yeah, because it took a while. There was the countdown for a while, and then once the coordinates kicked in, everything really kind of took off. Preston, how about you?
It was actually the first alternate reality game that I'd ever played. Never even heard of the genre before this, and so I kind of got into it once the Halo commercial came up. I was a video game player and a large fan of the Halo universe, and so that's
why does this not surprise me?
Yeah, well. Yeah, no, I'm very much into video games. Went on, actually, after I Love Bees, to join the industry and make video games myself.
That's awesome. Nice. Jeff, how about you?
Well, I was actually part of another Xbox community because I was a huge fan of Xbox and Halo already. And so basically, as soon as the Halo 2 commercial came out with I Love Bees at the end, that had me connected right there.
Nice. And Lenore?
I don't remember.
Oh, now, come on. I'll match Kristen's bet of $100 if you will answer the questions.
Ah. Yeah, I actually heard about it from Ariok first, and then, interestingly, after I was in it for 2 weeks and didn't tell my boyfriend, he sent me a link to it. He said,
really?
This isn't anything I'm into, but it looks like something you'd be interested in. And I'm like, yay, now I can tell you what I've been doing for the last 2 weeks.
Wow.
Entropy.
Convenient.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's nice. Nice. So was this all of you guys, was this your first introduction to kind of alternate reality games and Unfiction?
Actually playing it, yes.
Yeah. But you'd heard about the Beast, but...
And Majestic.
You guys
and
all another. Ended up kind of at the Unfiction community because of I Love Bees?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Entirely because
exactly.
of I Love Bees.
Nice.
Yeah.
Googling I Love Bees brought me to Unfiction.
The power of Google. So that's really interesting. So all you did was you saw the URL and then you Googled it. Did you went to the website first? Was
looking like, for other people. Yeah, this.
Yeah, what
it.
Is this? So you Googled it and it went to Unfiction. So
I think fairly early on, Dana's blog also linked directly to Unfiction, which helped find it.
Yeah, I think that's how I found it as well.
All right, these are good historic game mechanics here. This is very important. Very important.
Yeah, now so, it would be a link to a in-game blog that.
Well,
you
no,
have
now
to stay
it would
on.
Be it would be a like this button is what it would be. So what drew you to it? I mean, you went to the website. You know, you're Halo. I mean, everybody, you're drawn to games by various. Everybody has their own reasons that something interests them. I mean, what was it that was compelling?
Yeah, for me, like I said, I was a very large fan of the Halo universe. Not. I mean, I enjoy the games, but I probably spend 5-6 times as much time reading the books and more of the backstory for Halo. So for me, like any chance to get any more little tidbits of information about that universe was worth whatever it took.
So you were a big Halo fan then coming into it. Okay, so it was about finding out more about Halo and getting backstory and fun stuff like that. Yeah. Awesome.
For me, having been interested in the genre and being a puzzle solver primarily, And the idea of being like a secret agent, kind of like the Majestic thing was supposed to be. When those coordinates came up, it was like, okay, I'm going to go scope out this location and see what I can find. And so, you know, going through buildings that weren't actually where I was supposed to be. And
well, and to be clear, when the coordinates first came up, we didn't know.
Right.
We were supposed to be answering payphones. They were just coordinates. We knew something was going to be at right. these locations at a certain time. So. People were speculating, you know, what, pre-release demo, and they were, right. you know, all sorts of things.
Well, so. And it couldn't be payphones because there was that one out in the ocean, so that
oh,
didn't make
true.
Sense.
A payphone in the ocean, yes. The table back there is probably. Anybody else? Jeff, how about you?
I think for me, there wasn't really a direct connection other than the trailer at that point to Halo. So I think the thing that caught my attention was going to the website and seeing little bits, like finding pattern in the chaos type of thing. Like you're looking at the source and all this broken stuff, and you're finding little tidbits of phrases and words that don't belong. And it just really intrigued me, and I wanted to try to, you know, pull it out and sort it out.
Yeah. So kind of the deconstructing the archaeology of it, trying to figure out what was going on. Yeah. Nice. And well, Lenore, now you're a little is this you're what drew you? This is I'm curious to know myself.
Well,
what was it that your boyfriend said? Oh, Lenore would be into this. Why was that?
Well, that's what's funny is the website. I looked at it and I go, whatever, you know, and it wasn't until the coordinates. That he sent me the website, but he had read an article or something about it, so he knew a little, I don't know how much. It was, you know, I was a geographer in college, so when I saw those, I thought, cool, I got to go out in the world and find out what this is. And I didn't know anything about Halo, had never heard of it.
Right.
At this point, we knew there were payphones, I think, when I came in. Uh-huh. And I met Ranger D was the first person I met there, and we were just staring at each other. And then I just went, and I love bees. And then I thought, shit, wrong guy, because he just stared at me. And then
there is something fun about this. I remember that we're in the first days of the game when you go out to these coordinates. Nobody knew anybody really. I mean, you'd be standing there, and then you'd see somebody else kind of standing around looking.
Yeah.
At you, thinking, are they a crazy person like me? Crazy?
Yeah, exactly. Because sometimes. So he said Halo, because he was in it for that.
Uh-huh.
And then I don't think he even remembered that it was I Love Bees at that time, so.
Nice.
Yeah, the first one we showed up to, we were at the wrong payphone. But there was a good 30, 40 people standing around this spot. And it was the Pizza Hut down the road, which we found later. But yeah, there was a good 30, 40 people standing at that first payphone.
So they knew it was a payphone?
We had a guess that it must be something like that. So we had about 30 people stretched along just this one block of road being like, something's... And then nothing happened.
Yeah.
Something happened. The payphone rang down the road in the Pizza Hut, but none of us could hear it.
Was yours in where? North Carolina or where?
This was in Idaho.
In Idaho. And then you guys were in the Bay Area.
Yeah.
Right? And then Jeff, you were up
I was in Canada.
And they had Axons in Canada right off the bat?
No.
Oh. So you didn't have to like cross the border to find one. But they eventually came, right? They eventually came to Canada.
No, I don't recall. I begged for it. I was like, come on, please.
Well, we'll take this up in the second panel, yes. So the big question is, did any of you... Well, okay, backing up. So one out of four of you... was interested in this because of previous knowledge about Halo, and the rest of three of you, half of you had no idea and didn't really care at first.
I was aware of Halo and had heard that it was a horrible, horrible game, and because it's on a console, who plays games on consoles? Not real gamers.
But that wasn't what drew you. I mean, what drew you was the other stuff because it was all intriguing.
Yeah.
So did you all? Okay, well, Jeff, we know. So you never ended up. Answering a phone.
I never got to a payphone, no.
Oh, so who... But you guys did. You want to tell me your...
Oh, yeah, lots.
Oh, yeah, lots. There's one here for you.
If it rings, it's yours, Jeff.
For listeners that don't know, there's a payphone prop up here, just as an homage.
Yeah, let Jeff answer it.
Well,
it rings, all him.
Well, you can take your pictures with it afterwards. So... I'm sorry, go ahead. So tell me about the first time you actually answered the phone and how that worked for you.
Well, so I'd been following it through Unfiction and, getting to know these people and the idea that there was going to be these phones that were probably what it was all about. The actual first phone that I answered, I mean, I don't even know if I got to answer a phone the first day because... There was this giant crowd of people in Berkeley, including this woman and this guy who seemed really nice and seemed to know where the phones might be a little more than everyone else. Blonde woman.
Had some ringers there, huh?
Yeah, yeah. We had a couple
red
ringers.
Red hair at the time. She had red hair.
Yeah.
Pigtails.
Yeah. So anyway... I wasn't that interested in answering the phone, but I think I got to listen to one of them. And I had actually, being nerdy and stuff, I got this phone recording device from Radio Shack. So I was trying to like get that to record the sound that was coming out.
A little suction cup thing?
Yeah, exactly. Nice. And so So I got to hear sort of what was going on, and it was like, okay, I guess this has to do with the story that's going on the web page, because, you know, I'd been learning about the this AI that was having this weird thing and was taking over, and so it made sense in that context, but they were really short clips, so it was hard to tell what the heck was going on at this point.
And to be clear, so too, for those who aren't familiar, the story in the game kind of took part in two places. There was this audio drama that was basically delivered in short snippets via payphones around the country and then around the world. And when somebody would answer the phone and answer a question correctly, or there was some sort of audio for a sort of trigger, that then would unlock it. They would hear that audio, but then that audio piece was then unlocked on the website for everybody to be able to hear. So that was kind of the basic mechanic. There was also a story that took place in the bowels of the website, basically, you know, by this AI, this rampant AI that had landed on this website and was living within it and was using it to then kind of reach out. And so that was kind of the story that was being told there. So it was really an amazing audio drama, but the basic mechanic was answer a phone, unlock that content for everybody. And so on Axon Day, everybody would be watching this list of audio files, basically Axons, and waiting and hoping that somebody answered the right phone and hoping it would turn from red to green so that then we would have access.
Right, and early on it was like we would have to get maybe 3 phones for a particular sound clip out of 10.
That's right.
And that would unlock it. And of course, as time went on, that got more and more and more.
There was redundancy built in at first, but slowly that redundancy was taken away. So, you know, at first it was like 1 out of 10 phones has to be answered for this to be unlocked, and then eventually 20 out of 20, you know.
They were training us.
Yeah, they were training. They were just like rats in a maze. So, Preston, how about you? Did you get to answer a phone?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I got to answer quite a few. That became really a fun part of the game for the group that I was with. And we did. We really created a group and scheduled with each other about who was going to be at what places at what times. It got to be the point where we started recruiting people because we couldn't make it to a certain phone. The Pizza Hut place.
Right.
One of us couldn't make it there one day, so we called the manager and recruited him to answer the phone.
I remember that.
And there was the worst. I was assigned to a hotel phone one time, and something came up at work, and I couldn't make it. But I'd written down the phone numbers for all of the phones in this little bank of phones. So I called one of the other ones. And I knew there was a little service station right next to this bank of phones. That's where the hotel service staff was. So I called one of those, and somebody picked it up, and I said, "You don't know me." And this is going to sound really strange, but in a couple of seconds, that phone next to you is going to ring, ring. And I heard it on the phone.
Oh, my God.
And I said, "You need to pick that phone up, and there's going to be, I know it's going to sound weird, somebody's going to ask you this question, and you need to answer them this word." So she has 2 phones, one with me and one with Kristen on the other line, answering and giving the right information. And then I just kind of said, "Thanks."
That's a great story. I've never heard that story.
But that forcing you to be in the real world, I mean, from that point on, honestly, I didn't care that this was Halo anymore.
No,
it was
like,
great, because at that point on, this was a game that was in and of itself. It required more than like punching buttons and whatnot, coordination of people, coordination of time,
doing
stuff.
And, yeah.
That made it really great for me.
Now, I should say, as time went on, the phone calls changed a little bit from, you know, being just recorded phone calls to every once in a while, a phone would ring and somebody would answer it, and there would be actually, the voice actress was live on the other end of the line.
Yeah, that was surprising.
Did you get one of those?
I did get one of those. Yeah,
so tell us about that.
I think that was at that same hotel. Yeah, that was at that same hotel, and I, you know, that was my scheduled one. It was next to where I worked, so I picked it up expecting a, you know, recorded voice, and it was the same voice.
Yeah.
But it was live, so it was really weird.
So how long did it take for you to catch on that it was live?
Fairly quickly, because, you know, previously it was very much just a, you know, ask you a question about something in the story and you needed to know the answer about it, right? Mm-hmm. So I pick up the phone expecting to hear, you know, tell me about, you know, something about the apocalypse or, you know, something like that. And instead, this woman starts talking to me and then asks me a question and stops. Like she's expecting an answer. And it was more a conversational question rather than what's this tidbit of information. So it was very surprising, but it was really cool.
Nice. And I will say, the key that you said there, you said, I had been answering this same phone consistently for quite a few calls. And so I think, knowing what I know now, knowing what we know now, I think that may have had something to do with you having been on the list to receive the live calls, right? Because it would make sense.
Yeah.
I guess, not to jump the gun, but...
I think they kind of kept track of...
which numbers were reliably being answered.
Yeah.
Right? Because there were some, like in the middle of, I don't know, I was living in Las Vegas at the time, and the phone was in the middle of a casino, which if you've ever been in the middle of a casino and heard how quietly phones ring... was just about impossible to hear and pick up. So
they did a good job. So my Pizza Hut manager friend, he got a live phone call too, because he answered
really?
That phone every time.
The Pizza Hut manager friend became an operative for you.
Totally.
This is awesome. Any other good phone answering phone stories? And none of you went through a hurricane or anything like that. How many phone calls, Ariok, did you, I mean, you answered probably what, how many
calls? Oh, I couldn't even count. I answered at least, following, I think the first time, I answered at least one or two every week.
Was this in Berkeley?
No, I actually would, sometimes it would be in Berkeley, sometimes I would go out to San Francisco, though, just because, you know.
And were there always other people at the phones?
Usually, yeah. After a couple weeks, it got... fewer and fewer, as we all know. People were like, I guess there's not going to be somebody giving me a free beta to Halo 2.
I want a beta key to the,
So a lot of people who had a lot of enthusiasm early on kind of dropped off. But there were, you know, we had a good group in Berkeley and a good group in San Francisco. Dark Forge was one of the guys who was in the East Bay area, and he actually created this whole spreadsheet of the coordinates and exactly what the address was for each coordinate, and you know, and then we would parse it out for our area, and then PETA would make a map of it. I don't know that we like would assign phones.
No, usually on Unfiction we had threads for each area, I guess. And so San Francisco and Berkeley had their own. And so you'd go in there and say, I plan to answer all of these. And like, I am not a morning person. So all the morning ones. And it was great because people like Ranger D and Centauri, and they were downtown in the morning. So they'd like leave breaks for work and answer them when they could. But I would take every single, once about 1 o'clock hit, I answered all of them.
Nice.
And then sometimes I go to Berkeley too to get them. So had I known that it was, that live calls had something to do with answering them at that time, I would have said, I'll just answer this one or something.
So, I mean, this touches on what was going to be my next question. I mean, give us a sense of kind of the, speaking of community, I mean, the community, some of the payphones, like Preston, I would imagine, yours, it felt like this little group, this little platoon of people.
Team Idaho. Go Team Idaho.
Yeah, Team Idaho grew up. And it was interesting, again, as the game went on, the requests that you would get from the operator became more and more complicated, right? There was like, you know, basically dress up and show me what, you know, people were dressing up as you know, different ranks and having their picture taken, their crew, and submitting themselves to be on the crew, right? And then how did that affect things?
I really enjoyed that community aspect of it, of having to reach out and do more. I mean, we went to a mall, right? And we're like, okay, everybody, we need 100 people standing around this payphone. We just grab people as they come by and make them stand next to a payphone, right? We showed up at a restaurant payphone that had been calling, and we had, you know, this one was had to
so
be a whole bunch of costumes.
So you grabbed strangers to stand around the payphone and make it look bigger than it was.
The amount of people that I randomly roped into this game was great.
So I need to revise this Wikipedia entry then to be from, you know, 500,000 players.
They had no idea what they were doing. But stand around a payphone, get a picture.
Awesome.
Great.
All right, well, we've been talking about phones. Jeff, I feel like we've been having a lot of you out because you didn't have a phone. But what was your, I mean, your major contribution for this game? I think this is the first time you started. Did you start a wiki page for that? But I know that you were compiling the audio bits and kind of editing them together for people to listen to, because that was a big piece of the puzzle. That was part of the great design. There was stuff for people on the ground to do, but then once it was unlocked, it was up to the players to then assemble them in the right order, and you had something to do with that, right?
Yeah, I didn't really have the ability to take part in the live events, the phones and everything, so I didn't really have a localized community. So with Unfiction, I just kind of sat there and really tried to organize everything that was coming out through all of these events. And so I didn't do any wikiing at that point. It was Extra Sonic who set up his website with MediaWiki, and he was asking for people to help populate it with all this information. So we kind of had the Fireflies group of people to help there. And so I was kind of, that was my first foray into wiki editing and all that. But on my own side, because there were so many little snippets of like puzzle pieces of audio and all that, I just created my own page to try to organize and put everything into columns and see the narrative unfold. That there was no real guide in the game itself to do that, so it was a valuable resource to try to understand what was actually happening with all these different characters.
Yeah, it wasn't like automatic. I mean, it wasn't like as you unlock stuff, it all like went into, like today they would make it a big HTML5 app or something that would do it all. Now it was all up to you. So you're an organizer archetype then.
That was my contribution.
Well, that's awesome. Okay, so I would be remiss, the big pivot point in this game came from Mr. Preston Thorne here, when a lot of people say that, you know, alternate reality games are on rails and the story's on rails and they're pretty much set in stone and you can't budget, even though they make it feel like you are impacting the game. But that kind of didn't seem to happen, because you kind of ratted out the main character. And tell us how that worked. Tell us what happened, what the fallout was.
It was on that live phone call.
Uh-huh.
The live lady on the other end of the line started asking me about, you know, there was the main AI on the webpage, but then that main AI was what was actually speaking on the telephone.
Right.
And so she started asking me about the other AIs that we'd been seeing on the website. Now, they'd created this character, the sleeping princess. Very like this little girl character that was supposed to be all nice and finding out later was really supposed to tug on everybody's heartstrings and nobody was going to hate this. For me, I'm a programmer in QA. A program embedded inside another program that seems really nice, that tugs on everybody's heartstrings, that's kind of hiding in the background, to me screams virus.
Right.
So, I was like, great, I get a chance to turn in the virus and maybe help out this AI. So, yeah, no, when the person, the AI on the phone call asked me about the sleeping princess, I thought, well, great, we can get rid of this thing that's causing all these problems. And I was sure, like I said, I'm a programmer in QA, I was sure that this was the bad
guy. We're helping.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Because that's what viruses do. That's how they act in a system. And so when she asked, I told her, I said, you know, this is where you go on the webpage to find the sleeping princess. Everybody knows the good old 404 page, right? Did anybody get that room in the hotel? Everybody, I hear stories of Artrest, everybody trying to get room 404, but I got the famous moniker of ratting out the sleeping princess,
right,
and being the rat bastard who ratted out the sleeping
and,
princess.
And to credit the people behind the game, I mean, they could have just ignored that and never let anybody know, right? But they decided to, no, now we have to change the ending of, or change the story now based on this.
And, and I'm sure I cost them some good sleep.
I'm sure all hell broke loose, yes. Well, again, it wasn't like it had to, but it was a decision going, we have to, you know.
You know, I was really glad that they did that they didn't just ignore that.
Yeah.
It was too cool not to do.
Yeah, yeah. So, okay, so the big question now is, this was 10 years ago, right? You're here 10 years later talking about this. You just got a freaking tattoo on your leg 10 years later.
What?
It was while you were sleeping. It was just a little prick. Just a little prick.
Nice.
Sorry, that was a reference that I'll probably need to explain at some point.
Poor Yasmin.
How did this game, if any, how did it change your lives?
Well, I'm here. I I have a number of great friends now that I met through this game specifically. I've been to a number of weddings and, you know, just I know people that are, I expect will be my friends forever. So that's the main thing for me.
Nice. Preston?
Definitely. Some amazing. The fact that I'm here 10 years later and I walk in the room and can just immediately give some of these guys hugs, and it's great. However, it was a huge impact actually on my life. At the time, I was in semiconductors, you know, great corporate thing, being a programmer, right? But I loved video games my entire life. And never kind of really thought I could actually make a career out of that. Till I played this game, and I went, wait a minute, here are people telling stories. You know, I got to know actually some of the creators behind Halo through the process as well, too. I'm like, there are people actually making a living doing this. And I decided to go for it. Nice. And about 6 months later, I actually got a job at Epic Games as the engine QA manager. And so I helped to develop the Gears of War games, the Unreal Tournament games, many of the other games that have been on the Unreal Engine. I was the one that actually put out the UDK, the free version of the engine, so that like everybody can use it now. And it's been amazing seeing what's happened from that. And I've stayed in that. I was at Epic Games for 7 years, and now I'm at Amazon Games, still making games and entertainment.
That's a pretty big
great.
Impact. That's a pretty
it was.
Big impact. Jeff, how about you?
I would say that it's definitely the community. Like, I left that Xbox community behind and moved to Unfiction.
Good for you.
And it really opened my eyes to, like, the creativity of people and being able to tell stories in these groundbreaking types of ways. And it's evolved over the years. But Unfiction was like the huge thing, and I guess from there on, I mean, I took the role of organizer. So over time, I've made more wikis, and I think really from the ARG standpoint, it's just the connection that we get to the stories. Like, there's something special with alternate reality games because they're so personal. They bring you in with the interaction. Isle of Beast's story was like. It was heart-wrenching. It was beautifully written. The characters, the development, and all that, and we were a part of that story, and that caught me right there, and so I wanted to see what else was going to be happening over the years, and it's just evolved from there.
Nice, Lenore, how about you?
Well, beyond I can't walk by a payphone that are there. I know they're disappearing.
Right.
I mean, there's pictures of me just looking sad in front of payphones now that are like where they're all torn out.
Something that went from being never noticed them. Now every payphone you see.
It does what ARC's supposed to do, make it look at the world differently. Yeah. But it affected my life because somebody in the audience is like my best friend.
Aww.
And I can, the first time I ever talked to her is on a recording
on
that I can
phone.
Listen to anytime I want, which is kind of creepy and kind of cool. There's a picture when we first met, when we hugged, that somebody took that she sent to me. Someone had sent it to her, and it's like, this is the first time we met. And how many people who you're really good friends with that you have, first time you talked to them, first time you met them, like recorded.
For posterity.
For posterity. So, and who knew that would happen? It was very, very odd. And very cool. So I'd say that affected my life.
Nice. Oh, that's great. Again, it feels like, you know, community. It's that's the big thing for all four of you. That was a major way, the most major way it felt like it affected you. Now the big question that I'm sure people really need to know is, did you buy an Xbox and or the game because of this?
I think they should have given me one.
Yeah, I would not disagree, but.
Okay, so I, like I said, PC gamer. Consoles are for non-gamers. Halo's a terrible game. I heard it's terrible. I'm never going to buy that. As a result of this, I bought an Xbox and Halo 2, only Halo 2, because it had a community function where you could play games with your friends online.
Uh-huh.
And all of my friends who had played this game were playing Halo 2 now online, playing, you know, not the regular version of the game, but we would get together and play Zombie Hunt and, you know, our own multiplayer version of it, just us, you know. And then sometimes people would go off and play with other people, and that was a nightmare because of, you know, racist 13-year-olds spouting terrible things. apart from that, that was, yeah. So I bought the whole thing. I ended up getting a 360 later and Halo 3 and yeah. But it's really the community that got me to get that, not...
Preston, how about you?
Oh, well, yeah, I mean, I already had that.
You and, already have.
As I said, being in video games, I continued to do all that. I actually got hugely into the Halo community further. We play dress up now. I actually...
That's a different con.
Well, yeah, it is. We're going to that one, Dragon Con. But no, like, I actually got to know a lot of these guys really well enough. Now I make Halo armor for myself, and my wife is Cortana, and my son made his own Halo armor. And and so, yeah, we've continued to that. And I know a lot of the guys at 343 personally now, having been in the industry, and it's really fun to know that and to see that and be part of that.
Nice. Jeff, did you end up buying?
No.
You didn't?
I already had it.
Oh,
I was
okay.
Already getting it. I was already a fan of it, so it just kind of, it really solidified my love for Halo, because it kind of broadened the horizon of what could be told within the Halo universe. Mm-hmm. And I'm personally very glad of where Microsoft's been taking
it. But bought the game opening day, first day it was out?
Oh, yeah.
So biggest release and entertainment release in history up to that point? You were one of the people that bought it?
Yeah.
All right.
Halo 4, I'm just telling you, Spartan Thorn, you know, wink, wink.
It's what now?
If you played Halo 4, there's a storyline that follows a certain Spartan Thorn.
Really?
Yeah.
Well.
And that's a fun one.
Oh. All right. We'll have to get on that. Lenore?
Did not buy an Xbox. Did not buy Halo, obviously.
No, we were best friends with the operator.
Still do not have an Xbox. I play on Ariok system.
Rock Band.
Not Halo. Rock Band.
So the big question, too. So after this, do you still play alternate reality games? Do you have time? How's life changed for you? Do you still have time for this stuff, or has life moved on?
Well, it depends on the game to a large extent, but I do still play them. I played Ingress up till about a year ago, almost literally a year ago. I think I stopped right before the last ARK Fest. It just didn't...
Didn't grab you.
Well, it did in the beginning, and then they kind of let the story fall off, and it was like, oh, I don't know. And the competition, and rather than collaboration, was very, it's kind of anathema to me. So that was one. I loved Jejun. I'm hoping for something from those folks to come out soon again, but I don't know. Just I keep my eyes open, but nothing is really... been catching my eye lately.
All right, Preston. Make games now.
Yeah,
I don't have time.
I had 7 years of epic crunches, so I paid back those sleepless nights.
Yeah.
actually, just kind of got back into them a little bit more now. I've got a little bit more free time now, and started playing Ingress, mostly just because I was like, I get to go somewhere in the real world and do something. This feels like a payphone.
Yeah.
You know,
an invisible payphone.
And so yeah, I'm actually just starting to kind of get my feet back into it. A big difference though now versus the amount of free time I had before with two kids. I got four kids now, and I'm making video games. And
things change, right?
It's hard.
Yeah, that does change. Jeff, you seem still pretty active, or have been up until recently?
I used to play a lot more, not as much now. I Love Bees. I had a full time job, but I was still playing I Love Bees at the same time, which was probably not all that good.
I think we all did, yes.
So I've tried to follow things, but being actively involved, especially as much as I was with I Love Bees, not as much. Especially during the day, during work hours.
Right. Lenore, how about you?
Are ARG still around?
Nah.
Yeah, it's all transmedia
is that
now.
Bad to
no,
say?
It's
not,
well, yes.
No. I played Last Call Poker. I played, I really can't remember. That's an honest, but not recently, I haven't. But I've gone to ARK Fest the last 8 years, something like that. So.
There you go, nice. Nice, well thanks, this has been great. Do we have time for questions for these guys, or?
Yeah.
You want, do we have time? Okay, questions from the Grand Inquisitor, go for it.
Do you need to grab a microphone?
I'll come to you.
Oh, okay.
I'll hold the microphone.
Oh, okay. So I have the Grand Inquisitor tradition of an object to signify it. We have bee antenna. Alon, this is the closest I could get to your little dancing bee girl. So my question is, with the event of turning in the AI, you're all saying that it was cool that the game runners changed the story as a result of that rather than just ignoring it. Do you think they did a good job with how they changed the story, and especially knowing that, you know, Preston thought he was doing the right thing in turning her in. You know, do you think that affects the perception of, you know, whether or not he was a rat bastard?
Well, I'll tell you, as soon as it became, you know, public, because I knew I'd done that a couple of days before anything else happened on the website. I definitely very quickly found out I was in the minority, thinking I'd done the right thing.
You what?
A very small minority thinking I'd done the right thing. You know, I don't know what the story would have been without that. I can tell you I loved the story with it, even being on the receiving end of being called a rat bastard and worse, lots worse. But, you know, I don't know what the story would have been without it. I know the story was wonderful with it. I think they did a great job of dealing with everything the players threw at them.
Serious question for me. I mean, were you able to let that criticism slide off your back, or was it a little tough sometimes?
It was a little tough sometimes. Mostly I was able to let it slide off my back. Yeah. You know, when I got a personal phone call from some random person that found my phone number and was making death threats on my phone, that was a little rough. But it was actually really good training for making video games in the future.
Excellent.
Online criticism did not decrease in the last few years, let's just say that. The number of trolls online and their availability to your personal life has not decreased.
So it was the first layer in a thick skin.
Yes, I've built a good thick skin, and and actually talking with some of the creators here, I know they took that into account, and I appreciated that. They thought about that. Sure. They thought, not only what is this going to do to the story, but what's this going to do to this Preston
poor guy?
Right?
We're hanging about to dry.
And I know without that, some of my I think PETA's favorite moments wouldn't have happened as a result.
I thanked you at Combat Train. I said, thank you. For doing that, because I wouldn't have been able to free the sleeping princess.
There was a group of people that fought for that sleeping princess, and they loved her, and I think that created a great experience for them.
Yeah, and then she's gone. Any other questions? Alon has a question here.
Oh, it's awesome.
Alon Lee.
If there was one thing you guys could change about the game, what would it be?
Way more phones. Sorry.
Jeff here did an amazing job of piecing together the story on the website. There was a lot of reliance, I think, on the player characters to do that kind of thing. And I know a lot of my other friends that loved this story and wanted to get deep into it couldn't find all those little things that the players had created, and so it went over their heads. So it was this amazing story, both on the website and with the audio and everything, and it was really cool that players had to piece it together, but for a casual player, it was just so very unapproachable.
I'm not sure if this has changed, but continue.
More.
Any other questions? This has been a great panel, guys. It was a lot of fun. It was great seeing you guys all together. And thanks for bringing in the time. Let's give our panelists a big hand.
So for the listeners of the Story Forward podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook download when you sign up for a free 30-day trial to give you a chance to check out their service. You can get cool stuff like the 6-hour-long official Star Wars radio drama for free right now. So to download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/storyforward. Again, that's audibletrial.com/storyforward for your free audiobook. We'll be right back. choice of Guardians of the Galaxy this week, I thought I'd make this week's cross-media moment about Guardians of the Galaxy. So I'm excited. I haven't seen the movie yet, but it seems that they have released a website called Galaxy Getaways, which is basically a... Remember travel agencies back in the day? So it's basically a galactic travel agent website that's got kind of some kind of fun things on it. So if you go to thegalaxygetaways.com, not sure why they have the in front of there, but I'm sure there's something else at the other site. But thegalaxygetaways.com, you select a region, and then you're immediately greeted by, you know, a pretty cool video.
Hawaii. Tahiti. The Bahamas. Some of the most beautiful destinations on Earth look like sh** compared to the rest of the galaxy. How do we know? Because we've been there and done that. And now your journey is our job. At Galaxy Getaways, the universe's premier travel company, we specialize in taking you beyond the ordinary vacation destinations of Earth. Leave it all behind and travel to the galaxy's most exotic locations. Experience six-star luxuries. Explore ancient ruins. Party like an outlaw in a city that never sleeps. Take the vacation of your dreams now with Galaxy Getaways, the only way to get away. You're welcome.
Yeah, so it's pretty slick. Pretty slick video there. It looks, the visuals are a lot of fun. Obviously, it seems like it's using some stuff from the movie. So on the website then, it's got, you know, three destinations basically. You know, I guess the three planets. And like says, Destination Morag, today's weather, 70% chance of meteor showers, 68 degrees Fahrenheit. So not bad. Nowhere, it's today's weather, it says who cares. So you've got a little kind of fun bunch of stuff where you can kind of explore the planet. And then it's kind of interesting. It has a place where you can take off to travel to these planets where you enter your actual address. And you hit launch your trip, and then it kind of launches Google Maps, and it shows an overhead of your neighborhood, and then this, you know, spaceship shadow comes over you, and it transports you to, you know, whatever world you want to explore there. And then you can explore the world with Street View, which is kind of interesting that I guess Google has had their Street View cars out on these planets. So it's pretty slick. It's pretty cool. There's not a lot of stuff here. There's some activities. There's an I Am Groot game, which I tried to play, but the start button is down below where my browser, where my screen resolution can see it, and I can't scroll for some reason, which is kind of disappointing. So a little bit of bugginess there. There's a quiz, you know, which Guardian of the Galaxy are you? Mostly it's there. There's not a lot of interaction between the kind of, you know, the kind of interesting Google Maps stuff going on, which I think they could have done more at. But for me, it was a good kind of glimpse into the world, and it helped me, you know, want to go see the movie a little bit more. I've been hearing really good things about it. So anyway, that's it. Thegalaxygetaways.com. I've kind of got to give it. I'm going to give it a conditional thumbs up. It's not great, but it's not terrible either. So I'll give Galaxy Getaways and Guardians of the Galaxy a thumbs up for their website here for this week's cross-media moment. Well, that'll do it for this week's episode, folks. Hope you enjoyed our little interview with the players of I Love Bees talking about the experience after 10 years. If you like this episode, you'll want to stay tuned next week for episode 57, where we'll have an unprecedented conversation with the actual creators behind the I Love Bees alternate reality game. Alon Lee, Sean Stewart, Jim Stewartson, and even Kristen Rutherford, who was the voice actress who played the sleeping princess and the operator. So if you're a Halo fan, if you're an I Love Bees fan, you won't want to miss next week's episode. So thanks for listening to the Story Forward podcast. I'm Steve Peters. We'll see you next time. Thanks for listening to the Story Forward podcast. If you like what you've heard, be sure to tell a friend about us, or better yet, leave us a great iTunes review at storyforwardpodcast.com/iTunes. Hey, got some feedback, a story tip, or a suggestion for a show topic? Give us a holler. You can tweet to us at StoryForward. You can join us on Facebook.com/groups/StoryForward. You can send us an email at info@StoryForwardPodcast.com, or you can always stop by our home on the web at StoryForwardPodcast.com. And don't forget, you can listen to Story Forward on your iPhone, Android phone, Kindle Fire, and other devices with Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher's the smarter way to listen to radio. Find it in your app store or at Stitcher.com.